Support comes from the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at the University of Southern Mississippi. OLLI offers classes, seminars, and socials, both in-person and online, to help individuals continue in their love of learning. Registration ongoing. More at usm.edu/OLLI.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulturist Felder Rushing, and we've got the lines wide open. The lines are here for us to talk about gardening, anything related to gardening. And if you've got questions or want to share something, or maybe you're trying something, and or you're not sure if you really ought to do anything at all. I'm really good at that. You know, my default is live and let live. Don't worry about it. And if it's causing problems, let's come up with the best solution for everybody, your plants, your garden, yourself, your neighbors, the wildlife, all that kind of stuff. I'm not all tree-huggy and all like that. I don't mind recommending chemicals if you need them, but a lot of times you mostly just need somebody to hold your hand about stuff, because there's a whole lot of things in my garden that there's nothing I can do about. Well, we can talk about that kind of stuff, but meanwhile, lines are wide open. I appreciate, before we get to the callers, all the folks last week who supported MPB during our pop-up drive time. It was a pop-up drive time, and we got quite a few supporters. I think it was fun to do, and I'm going to be sending out pictures of my little possum Pogo after that. Java, everything okay with all that?
Yeah, we always appreciate our supporters, and I don't know if you know this, but they always kind of fall on a Friday.
Well, because gardeners are going to step up. We got squash to share, too. Hey, maybe that's what we need to do next year, is support MPB by sending bushels of squash. Nah, better not.
To bring some gardening into the building, Jason had got a tomato just yesterday from somebody in the building who has a garden, and I could tell it came from the garden.
Because it wasn't perfect.
It wasn't perfect, but it had a nice red look. It looked flavorful.
So it was sun ripened, as we call it.
There
sun
we go. Ripened. It wasn't from the store.
Yeah. Well, I picked. I'm not sure if I sent you. Did I send you a picture of my purple pod peas last week?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. I just want to let you know that I actually, for the first time in 11 or 12 years, I have a summer garden. It's a little garden. It's like 30 feet by 4 feet, a little skinny thing inside of my house. But I got corn and beans and squash and sweet potatoes. And I'm actually made my first ever homegrown green bean casserole.
Oh, I knew you was going to put casserole. Yes, sir.
Well, you know, and all the recipes call for using cream of mushroom soup. I'm not a mushroom eater, so I went to the store and I found cream of celery. I found cream of broccoli. But I found, and my horticulture friends around the country, I emailed them pictures. They could only in the South are you going to be able to buy a can of cream of bacon soup.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, let's start up this morning by talking with John Collin from Jackson. Hey, John, how are you?
Oh, as always, 10 years younger just hearing your voice.
Well, woohoo! What's going on, man? What can we help you with?
Well, this may sound perverse, but I grow plants mostly to enjoy the insects associated with them.
Yeah, you're not eating them, are you?
Well, actually, they're a good source of protein.
Yeah, and low cholesterol.
Absolutely.
And some of them will clean your teeth while you're chewing them. Anyway.
After all, if you like crawdads and shrimp, how can you find that too odd?
That's right. That's right. So anyway, so what's your latest? You grow them just to photograph them, or to enjoy them, or because of pollinators, or what?
Well, it's a variety of things. Mostly, it's a fascination with that jungle out there. All those complicated beasts doing remarkable things.
Yeah.
And not just the sweet butterflies, but the parasites, the predators. But here's what I'm concerned about. Milkweeds support a wonderful variety of living things adapted to their alkaloids, not just the famous monarch, which is so endangered, but a beautiful brick red longhorn beetle and sorts of stuff. And milkweeds have been declared public enemies by the Department of Agriculture.
Huh.
They are endangered, too. So I like your advice on growing native milkweeds in Mississippi.
Well,
how to get them, how to grow them, anything that might interest people in these, to me, astounding plants.
They are. As a matter of fact, mine have a really pretty, I don't know what the adult is, but the larvae of some kind of true bug. It's some kind of it's a true bug, but their larvae got black legs and bright orange bodies, same color as some of the flowers.
Yeah. Things that taste unpleasant in the insect world tend to advertise it by being bright and beautiful.
Yeah.
And
To get you going, there are quite a few milkweeds that are sold commercially, but most of them by kind of esoteric mom-and-pop type places, mail-order type. And there are a few local garden centers that will carry different kind of native milkweeds. One of the native milkweed vines is an extremely, even though it's native, you know, it can still be extremely invasive. Matter of fact, it's hard to get rid of. And it's a real vigorous vine. And by the way, folks, if you're not sure what a milkweed is, if it's got milky sap, you know, that's a good indication. There's other plants with milky sap also. But anyway, there are some really weedy ones. My favorite, though, John, is actually not a native, at least not to North America. They call it the tropical milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I like it, because it's a garden-quality plant, gets up knee-high, waist-high. It blooms nonstop. Unlike the natives that bloom and then go, this blooms all the time, and you can root it from cuttings, and on the coast, it'll come back after a normal winter. But
may
I like
make
it.
A comment on that milkweed?
Yeah?
It's been shown to be detrimental to monarch butterflies.
Actually, that's a myth. I'm real familiar with this. I've been to I work with the folks in Texas. It's a problem along the Rio Grande when the monarchs. When they migrate south in the winter, they congregate unnaturally along those where they naturalize along the subtropical parts of the country,
yep.
And they stay around, and problems build up in that. But as a garden plant in Mississippi, that's not a problem. It's really not.
Okay, and the monarch and other insects will take it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a terrific plant. It's a garden-quality plant, which is important because it's a gardening program. But the natives are important, too, but you have to have a wide variety. And there's over a dozen species, but they're not very showy in the garden, and so it's not going to pass that test. But anyway, the tropical one is not a problem in Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee, because when you get a frost, the butterflies keep on going. It's where it stays in bloom well into the winter, that's where it causes a problem, mostly along the Rio Grande.
All right. Well, what about the natives?
I don't discriminate on whether the plant's native or not. If it's a good garden plant, that's what we're talking about. I'm past president of the Native Plant Society, but again, it's hard to convince people to grow these things in a garden if they're not very showy or they don't perform for very long. See, so, you know, unfortunately, not fortunately, the fact is this is a garden-related program, not so much along the roadsides and stuff like that. But we do have plenty of cowhorn natives, a lot of good native, Asclepias is the Latin name.
Yes.
But we have a good bit because we're not spraying and mowing as much as we used to. So, anyway, it's a really good topic. I'd love to talk with you some more about this sometime, John.
Well, thank you so much. This has been enlightening and interesting, and all those wonderful critters that can live with milkweed, thank you.
All right. Appreciate your call about that. All righty. How about that? Guy who grows plants just enjoy the bugs, and I enjoy the bugs on mine as well. I really do. But let's slide up to Corinth, up to the icebox part of Mississippi, although it's not very icy right now. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, I had heard you mention several times about a vine, a cross vine, which I'm assuming it's related to trumpet vine.
Not related. But they look sort of alike. They both have tubular flowers that you can stick your thumb in.
Okay, I was wondering where I could get those. We have one local nursery in addition to a big box store, and the local nursery had them last year, but not this year. And I saw a website where you could order the seeds, but I didn't know how effective the seeds might be.
Well, I've seen them. I've never seen cross-farm seed, although mine is loaded with seed. Mine have got, they look like flat bean pods, almost like a wisteria. You know, they're long and they're flat like beans. And mine are loaded with it. I grow mine on a vine arbor. And I grow both the cross-vine, which blooms in the late winter, you know, usually before last frost, full bloom in, I'm going to say March or so, late February, March, or first part of April. And then the trumpet creeper, or trumpet vine, starts to bloom in June, July. You know, it's more of a summertime thing. Both of them are really vigorous. Both of them are native. Both of them tend to be a little aggressive if you can't walk around them and keep the little sprouts from coming up. But I've never seen, I don't know anybody who's growing from, they must grow from seed because they're all over the place from seed. So,
yeah, I have a trumpet vine now, and it is blooming now. Just transplanted it several years ago from off the roadside.
Well, see, let me suggest here. Get your local garden center, you know, who orders plants, you know, all the time. Tell them next time they put in their order to order a variety of cross vine that's called Tangerine Beauty. A regular cross vine is fine, but Tangerine Beauty has a lot more flowers, and it blooms a lot longer. But he can get those through his normal plant channels if he wants to.
Is it the wrong time of the year to set those out or plant the seeds?
No. Well, it's too. I don't know about planting seeds. Usually, the seeds ripen in the late summer and fall. But you know, I just have to. If you'll shoot me an email, I can give you detail about that. But mine have loaded with seed pods. I just don't know the best time to plant them because they're so easy to just dig plants. Matter of fact, I dug some up a couple of weeks ago to share with a friend of mine from Meridian. So it's the wrong time for garden centers to be ordering plants because most of their stock comes in the springtime. But anyway, look for the cross vine called Tangerine Beauty, and there's actually a trumpet creeper that's got yellow flowers. It's called Flava, I think. Anyway, there's some cool varieties of the tough native ones. But if you see some growing, if you know what cross vine looks like, it's got two pairs of two leaves, and then a stem, and then two pairs of two leaves, you can dig it up like ringing a bell.
So they bloom in late winter.
Yeah, late winter, early spring.
That would be true for North Mississippi.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So anyway, shoot me an email, and we might can take it a little bit further.
Okay, thank you very much. Enjoy your show.
All right, appreciate it. By the way, folks, in a few minutes, we're going to talk to a guy named Herbie Austin who helped me succeed in my garden. We're going to talk to him in just a few minutes after break. But first, let's go to Aaron in Meridian. Hey, Aaron, good morning.
Morning, Felder. How you doing, man?
So far, so good. What's up?
All right. I've got some potatoes. I planted red potatoes in my garden this year, and I've already harvested them.
How'd they do?
Fantastic.
Wow.
They did great.
Well, before we get to that, how'd you do it? Did you mound stuff up? Did you grow them in buckets? How'd you grow them?
Well, all right. So We're trying to do the no-till thing, and we've got really, really, really packed. It's essentially packed dirt. They did some excavating where they built the houses. Really pretty poor dirt, but we're getting it there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went and got it. The last seed potatoes I could find were at the Lauderdale County Co-op in Meridian. I couldn't find any anywhere else. I found those, and I brought them home and kind of got in a rush because I didn't know how long I had to plant them or whatever.
Yeah.
I went out in the garden in the pouring rain. It was pouring down on me. And I'm sitting there in the rain, and I did little mounds, but I did them the size of, you know, maybe like just a regular old hill in the garden. Nothing, no large mound. And then I just covered those mounds. I put them right on top, covered them just a little bit, and covered those with just a thick, thick layer of hay and just left it under the hay. And once they started coming up, I kind of mounted hay.
Kept adding hay to it. Yeah,
that's what
people don't realize. Of Irish potatoes grow on the stem above what you plant if it's in the darkness.
Right. Well, and that's what we did. We just piled hay on top of it, and finally when they died, we harvested them. This time we're going to do it just a little different. We've got the same hay that is in the that we piled on top. We piled some more on top of what was already there, and we're just going to do it no dirt, just in the hay itself.
I wouldn't do that. I mean, no, experiment. I encourage experimentation, but we already know that they grow better roots in dirt.
In dirt.
Yeah, okay. I mean, because soil, the dirt holds nutrients, it holds moisture better than mulch does. I mean, you can grow stuff in mulch, but it's going to have a really weird root system, and dirt is better for roots. So,
okay, even,
if,
about with really, really hard packed dirt.
Yeah, and by the way, you know what cottonseed meal is?
I do, yeah.
Get you some cottonseed meal once or twice a year, a light dusting over your stuff, and that'll provide protein for the worms and bulk them up, and they'll go down deep, and they'll dig your dirt deep for you. The kind of worms, the big night crawlers, they have vertical
right.
tunnels, and they'll come up at night
right.
and eat the hay and the cottonseed meal and take it way down deep, and that'll provide air and water and root. They'll dig your dirt for you. Just feed
okay.
your worms, and they'll do that.
Okay. All right. Well, my question on this is the ones that we harvested, we're going to use some of those for seed again. Do we need to wait till they sprout, or can you just go ahead and put them right back in the ground and they'll just sprout from the ground? What's the best way to do it?
A couple of things, and this is, you know, this is based on a lot of experience. You know, I stay in England a lot, and I have friends up in the Midwest. They plant potatoes for summertime. But
mm-hmm.
problem is, these plants don't do well in our heat and humidity in our hot, hot, humid summer nights, and they get diseases. So we found here in the South is better. They like to grow in cool climates, not hot climates, and
okay.
they'll freeze. If they plant them up north in the wintertime, they'll freeze. So we try to plant them in late February, March, maybe first part of April, and try to get a harvest before it gets so hot that it kills the plants.
Okay.
See,
okay.
so in general, we're looking at late February, March, maybe first part of April, although that's kind of pushing it. And then if you have some seed potatoes, plant them sometime in, let's say, the end of August so that the
okay.
plants will come up. It takes about 3.5 or 4 months to get a good harvest. See, so if you
okay.
plant them, you know, late July, first part of August, there's a good chance you'll get a harvest before the vines freeze in the fall. So, you know,
okay.
I would skip the middle of the summer for potatoes. They just don't okay. like it in the deep South.
Okay, and on the size of sea potato, you know, we have really large ones. We got little bitty ones. I was going to go with just golf ball size, a little bit bigger than
yeah,
a golf ball.
That's fine.
Right?
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right, then. Well, appreciate it, Felder.
Let us know how it works, man.
Will do, man. Will do.
Okay, appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we've got a caller on hold, but we're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back for the break, if you'll hold on, he's from New Albany. It's toll-free, so don't worry about that. But when we come back, we're going to talk just a couple of 3 or 4 minutes with my friend Herbie Austin, who is sort of the garden center guru of Mississippi. A lot of great garden centers, a lot of locally owned nurseries and garden centers. And I like to talk with Herbie because he's been at it for 40 years. He doesn't really care what he says. He can tell it like it is. And if he can sell you something, that's great. If he doesn't think it's best for you, he'll tell you that too. And I respect that. So anyway, we're going to come back and talk just briefly about what you can be doing this time of year, because garden centers are starting to shut down a little bit for the summertime. Anyway, Horticulture's Felder Rushing, Java Chapman, my producer, and other folks at MPB, we'll be right back right after this.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Buttress, host of Southern Remedies, Relatively Speaking, a show that explores issues that relate to you and your family, from mental health obstacles and family interactions to handling life disruptions. Whatever it is, we're here to help. Find out what we're all about and subscribe to the podcast by using any podcast app or by downloading our MPB Public Media app.
All righty, folks, welcome back. Horticulture's Felder Rushing. And like I said, we got Herbie Austin on the line. Hey, Herbie, how are you, man?
What's going on, man?
You staying busy?
I am just a little bit this morning.
You know, I stopped by yesterday to get me some tomato plants because a lot of people don't realize you can plant tomatoes in the summertime. And, you know, before my old ones start to peter out, I got me some new ones coming. But it was raining, so he had a chance to kind of chat a little bit. I think that this is going to be a great weekend for people to get out and try some new stuff.
I think it will be, too. You know, like you say, you still plant tomatoes and all, and, of course, a lot of people don't realize you can still plant a lot of your garden. Your okra can be planted again, snap beans. you and I discussed this, corn can be planted again as long as you just watch it, you know, spray for your insects.
Yep. So, but I noticed that several garden centers I've visited around the state, y'all are starting, this is one of the first springs in a long time where you're just about out of plants.
Yes, we are.
I mean, it's just great. I mean, I'm not talking about the blueberries and the shrubs and things like that, but you know, the bedding plants, people who have never really gardened before, has that been your experience?
Yes, sir, it has, and they have really cleaned us out on flowering annuals and perennials.
Well, I know.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing, but it got some coming along, which is good, because garden centers sell hope as much as anything. Reason I want to call, I stopped by with my friend Jesse Yancey. Jesse is a guerrilla gardener. He gardens on a street corner that's not even his property, and every now and then we have to come in and get some more dirt for his garden. And, you know, I give this fruit tree talk, homegrown fruit talk there at Hutto's every winter, and I don't do it for pay. I do it for dirt. So I came up with this idea that every time you look up, me and Jesse are going out grubbing. We're like the dirt possums. We're grubbing around, digging up dirt around the size of your bins that fell out of the bags and all like that. So you got any other dirt possums like us that come scavenging for stuff?
Actually, I've got one tomato grower that comes in scavenging a little bit, but I mean, he's been in the business with me for umpteen years like you.
Well, the main reason I want to talk, first of all, I encourage people because the weather's good. The dirt is diggable for the first time in a lot of Junes, and there's plants available, and it's actually cool. I think this would be a great weekend to put stuff in the ground or make a raised bed or maybe a container garden.
Yes, it sure would be.
The main thing, though, I wanted to thank you because about a month and a half ago, I started a new garden, and I got, you know, you helped me choose the right kind of varieties because, you know, corn and beans and peas and stuff like that, varieties make a difference. And you had me plant a Louisiana purple pod string bean or
Louisiana purple pod string bean.
Yeah, they are the prettiest thing I ever saw. They are so pretty, and I cooked them. I made a big mess. I made asparagus casserole, but I forgot you didn't tell me you got to string them.
Yep.
You don't just snap them and cook them. They got stringed. You got to pull out of your mouth. So anyway, I'm living to learn. But I said I was going to blame you if the garden didn't work. Well, I'm calling to give credit because I got squash. I got beans. I got zinnias. I got corn that's blooming. I've got, what else? Squash. Well, I already said squash. Jalapeno peppers and tomatoes. And I just want to let you know that I can not only talk the talk, but thanks to you, I can walk the walk.
Well, I had a note to say I was going to brag on you for the garden you made this year. It looks super.
Well, you know, it's a little thing, but that's okay.
Hey,
it makes me feel better than my neighbors. Anyway, Herbie, I know y'all are busy. Back to work. I hope they work your tails off this weekend.
I do, too.
Appreciate it, man.
I appreciate it, Felder.
Yeah, Herbie, local garden center folks, been at a long time. They know you. They know your name. They want you to succeed enough to come back. Some of the other places, they don't care if you come back or not. But it's always good to support local garden centers because they're trying to do best for their community, and I appreciate them all. Now, let's slide up to New Albany. Hey, Tom, thank you for holding, man. What's going on?
Good morning.
Howdy.
I'm about to be building a deck mm-hmm. off the back door, and the pad was packed about, I'd say, a year or so ago. It's on a mobile home.
Uh-huh.
And where stuff has started to grow again, it's going to be 13 away and 21 long, so it's, you know, it's a pretty large area for the deck. But
right.
where that area is going to be covered, there's a few places. You got various bits and bobs of grass and other annoyances that, you know, you weeded them down or whatever. But once I get started building on this deck, I want to know if there's something I can spray down there or something I can do that will just prevent anything from growing. Just kill it.
Yeah.
Scorched earth.
Well, there are herbicides like that. That's what they call. They're called bare earth herbicides. They use them around power substations and other places where they don't want anything coming up. They don't have the management come back.
Right.
One of the problems with these is some of them will drift. And if it mm-hmm. rains, they'll wash away and they'll kill anything downstream. So
right.
it's been a long time since I checked on those kind of products because, you know, they're pretty narrow use. So I don't know any brand. If you shoot me an email, Tom, I can come up with some. As a matter of fact, I'll call Herbie Austin, who I just talked to, because he knows these kind of things, and I can't keep track of it. But here's what I suggest. I have one, two, three, four, five. I have six decks in my yard. Most of them are round, but they're big decks. And, you know, once if you're just put down, you know, weed it really good, put down some of this weed barrier cloth and then build over it, most of the stuff won't come through the weed barrier and it won't have enough sunshine to actually grow.
So, right. Well, what I was thinking was kind of like, you know, the weed barrier, but I wanted something maybe as a backup plan, so to speak, to make sure. And as far as downstream, it doesn't slope too hard away. But then once that end in the next year or two, I'm not going to be worried about vegetation there either, because it's going to get scraped down.
There you go.
And dug down, and there's going to be a pool. I'm not really worried about it.
Well, again, just be aware, some of these bare earth herbicides, they're very powerful, they're long-lasting, and they can kill a tree that's got roots in the area, and the tree could be 30 yards away. So I'm just saying, be careful about those things. And I really think that unless you're going to put space between your boards, you know, then I think, you know, just going and building your deck and putting some weed barrier down, that alone would keep, pretty much all of them under control. That's been my experience.
Outstanding. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Hope Pogo's doing okay.
Pogo's doing fine. I got Pogo where he'll let me scratch his back, but I had to get him used to my hand with Vienna sausages.
You're going to spoil it. You're going to spoil that, boy.
That's okay. He gets one, I get one. Back and forth. Appreciate it,
Tom. Thank you again, sir.
Thank you. All righty. We got some good calls here for a while. I've got a tune, you know, even though it's not a hot summertime, it's sort of like summertime you'd find in England or New England or something like that. Thought I'd play a little up tune for y'all. We're going to take a real quick break. Got some callers coming in now. It is a call-in program here at MPB, but we're going to do a little cheesy kind of up tune type thing called Hello Summer. By the way, would like to mention that if you're going to be knocking around the yard this time of year with all this rain, you're going to see some mushrooms. Mushrooms, toadstools, puffballs, stinkhorns. These are the flower version, a fungus version of a flower. We have a lot of moisture, kind of cools down, warm, cool, moist. You're going to see a lot of mushrooms. For the most part, they're not a problem. They're really not. And the lawn, the mulch, the flower beds, they feed on decaying organic matter, which is a good thing. So anyway, if you see mushrooms popping up this time of year, don't worry about it. Just don't eat them, okay? Just don't eat them. We're going to take a real quick break, some cheesy music, come back with some phone calls here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
I try to keep my cool, my phone is always draining. Yeah. Then I miss my bus, waiter brought the wrong drink. They told me I should chill, sorry I can't. The story of my life, every day is the same. It's early in the morning, when I'm still yawning. Please pull the curtain, cause the sun hurts my eyes. Summer's out boring, winter is snowing. Wish you were free like a bird in the sky.
Hello summer, I just wanna dance.
Way home, left my keys on the couch. Damn. Boss gave me work I should do at my house. Complaining to my girl, she's stressing me out. Told me I should chill, you gotta move out. Cause early in the morning, when I'm still yawning, please pull the curtain, cause the sun hurts my eyes. Summer's up boring, winter is snowing. Wish you were free like a bird in the sky.
Come on. Hello, summer, I just wanna dance for you.
All righty, folks. Welcome back. Hello, summer. And by the way, when you give us a call, our phone greeter today is a wonderful, wonderful producer named Liz Gill. We appreciate Liz sitting in there being the phone greeter today. Let's go to Starkville and see what Michael's up to. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, great man. Happy Friday there, Phil.
Thank you.
Hey, so a gentleman just called about weed control.
Mm-hmm.
Your recommendation was bare earth, scorched bare earth.
No, he wanted to do that. I was trying to steer him away from it.
Yeah. All right. I'm a cell site technician, right?
And yeah.
So companies like Crown Castle, SBA, whatever, they have a lot of weed control to do. And what they do when they build the site is they'll put sheets of plastic down on the ground and then cover it with gravel. Now, I don't know what size. Like, it's a little bit larger than pea gravel.
Yeah.
I don't know what the technical term for that is. But that might be an alternative.
Yeah, and that the gravel also further keep the weeds from getting kind of light they need and hold the plastic down in case they want to kind of push it up. But that's a good idea. But I think a physical barrier is a lot better than a chemical barrier.
Yeah, the sheet plastic is really the key to preventing weeds. And then they just come by and do spot weed control, like around the fence line and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's in areas out in the sunshine. Under a deck, he's not going to even have near as much problem.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, I think it might be more expensive than probably a chemical solution, but probably a little bit happier.
It shouldn't be. I mean, you know, a container of herbicide is going to cost you, $15-$20. You can get a roll of plastic a lot cheaper than that, and a little bit of gravel thrown on top.
Yeah, it'll be a couple yards of gravel probably.
Yeah.
But still, you know.
Good suggestion. Thank you, sir, Michael. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
All righty. Appreciate that. Got the lines open. You want to give us a call, toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. By the way, I got an email from an old friend of mine, a co-worker, a co-professional, and at one time my boss, a guy named Richard Mullinax from Starkville. He was a head of the horticulture, Extension Horticulture Department, and a fruit scientist, fruit specialist. And I've known Richard since 1970s. But anyway, he called and said he's getting a little irritated because so many developers, he walks around a lot like I do, developers are planting fast-growing plants that don't really like it here. Instant gratification. And the one in particular he was talking about is sort of a pet peeve of mine, too. It's called Leyland cypress, L-E-Y, Leyland cypress. It's a pretty tree. It's a good Christmas tree. It's a fast-growing tree. But I studied plant materials for landscaping at Mississippi State back in the 70s, and Lester Estes, my professor, he taught me back then that Leyland cypresses are fast and troublesome. They have problems with root diseases in our soils. They have problems with leaf diseases, and there's not a good control for any of them. So Leyland cypresses, if you've got to plant them as a temporary thing while something better is planted back behind it. Leyland cypresses are real fast. They're instant gratification. But I get a lot. And here's the problem. The Leyland cypress is a hybrid between two conifers. One is native to the mountains of the Pacific coastline, cools down at night, and the other is an Alaskan plant. And both his parents like cool weather, which we don't have here. Anyway, I appreciate him sending a note about that. Let's go now to Tremont. Hey, Joey, good morning, sir.
Hey, Fowler. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine. So far, so good.
Okay, I got a squash question. Is there such a thing as blossom end rot on squash?
Maybe. Blossom end rot is a lack of calcium in a fast-developing fruit. Tomatoes, peppers. I can see how it might be a problem on squash, but are these really small squash when they're doing it, or are they big?
They're about half in the size of the index finger.
Okay, that may just be lack of pollination. You know, if you don't have really good, if you don't have male and female flowers and bees taking pollen from the male to female, what looks like a squash can get the size of my finger or bigger and then just rot because it's not developing, because it didn't get, that little squash is not a squash until it gets pollinated. It's just a part of a female flower. So
the bees and all kind of flying creatures are all over blooms.
Yeah. Check and make sure you have male and female flowers open at the same time and the bees are working them. Males are on a little stem. Females are on the end of what looks like a little squash. And if you don't have both of them open at the same time and the bees working both the flowers, you know, like I say, they'll get a, and also with all this humidity and rainfall, I wouldn't be surprised to get some diseases on that real tender, fast developing squash. Mine are doing the same thing.
Well, all I could think of, you know, I've had it on tomatoes before.
Yeah. Well, if you
it reminds me of that. It's the reason I called that.
If you put some lime out in your garden, agricultural lime, I'm going to say at least every 3 or 4 years, not more than every couple of years, every 2 or 3, 4 years, put some lime out there, then, you know, that'll pretty well take care of the calcium deficiency, which is what causes blossom end rot.
So, well, would it be okay to spray the squash with blossom end rot stock spray?
Sure. All that is a liquid calcium fertilizer. Don't mix it stronger than what directions call for, because even though it's just fertilizer, it can burn the leaves of plants. So spray late in the day or in the morning, and don't overdo it.
Well, I thought I'd do about half strength.
No, you know, full strength is fine. Just don't, you know, middle of the day, too strong, that'll burn the leaves.
All right. Well, I sure do appreciate it.
I want to ask you something. Do you plant squash just once, or you keep planting it over and over again till you get tired of it?
Well, till the neighbors pull a gun on me when I bring some squash.
Well, the reason I'm saying, because I planted squash for the first time in my little garden. This house is built in the 1940s. There's never been a vegetable garden there. Before that, it was just woodland. Never been squash planted in decades. I planted squash, and boom, squash vine borers found my plant. So I'm going to replant and cover with some nets.
Did you stick them on needles?
No, I didn't catch it till it was too late. So I'm just going to replant and cover them with some nets, keep that little moth off of them. So,
yeah, well, I'm too lazy to do the net, so I'll just put up what I get.
Good luck on it. Good luck on it. Appreciate your call, Joey.
Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Now let's go to Bush, Louisiana, and talk with, is it Ainsley?
Ainsley,
how are you?
Well, I'm greatly blessed, too blessed to be depressed.
Well, there you go. Well, what can we help you with?
Well, I have a question, and just wanted to say we have a bunch of stuff planted, and we've had the best garden this year we've ever had, because I've been stuck at home more, and so I've had time to really keep up with the garden, and had wonderful tomatoes and peppers and all kind of stuff. My question, I want to root some camellias and blueberries and tomatoes, and I wanted advice about rooting them. Should I put them in water? Is this the time of year to do it? Potting soil, how do I do it?
It's some good questions, and all three of those will root, but they all three root at different, some are easier than others. Tomatoes are root in water. I mean, you can pull those little suckers off tomatoes, and they'll root right in water, no problem at all. Camellias and blueberries also root in the summertime, but they need bright light, not full sun, but bright light, indirect light, and they need a lot of humidity. So what I would do is I would take short cuttings, strip the bottom few leaves off, and put them in some moist potting soil. Put them in a place that's bright but not direct sunshine, and then make you a plastic, a clear tent to put over them, sort of like a little greenhouse to keep the humidity high. And that's real important. Blueberries under the best conditions are hard to root because, you know, it took them a long time to figure out how to do that, and they do it with a fogging system that keeps it humid all the time. And so if you make your little greenhouse, maybe cut the bottom off a clear cola bottle and use it as a you know, over individual pots, or just make your little hoop tent with some PVC or rebar or something like that, even coat hangers with some clear plastic, like a little miniature greenhouse, that'll keep the steam in. Does that help?
Yes, it does. And I appreciate you. The time of year is okay, but it needs to be covered with a...
That's right. They need light to root, but if the sun shines on them, it dries them out real fast and raises the temperature up too much. So bright, indirect light, you know, not in full sun, and then that humidity. And then at least once a day, lift it up and just wet them down to create a little steam in there. And just good quality potting soil.
And Well, I have some on hand for that purpose,
yeah.
But I wasn't sure how to get started, whether to start in water.
Does your potting soil have that white crunchy stuff called perlite in it?
I don't think it does, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, go to any garden center and get a little bag of this stuff called perlite, P-E-R-L-I-T-E. It's like looks like little white crunchy tiny bits of popcorn. And if you'll mix that with the potting soil will stay moist, but the perlite will help drain it so you don't rot the cuttings by keeping them too wet. And, you know, you could do it with sand. You know, a lot of people root in sand and perlite or potting soil and perlite or perlite and sand. So in any combination, it doesn't stay too wet or dry out too fast. And you get little bags of that stuff.
How about potting soil and sand? That wouldn't work.
It would. The main thing is you want to keep the plants humid and moist, not wet. And, you know, you go to a garden center, there's some commercial potting soils already have perlite in it. It's that little white crunchy stuff. Miracle-Gro comes to mind. You know, I don't sell anything in particular, but I know it's got perlite in it. But a garden center will know what you're talking about.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Okay. Good luck on it. Appreciate that.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you so much. And he said, a lot of people are being real cheerful. We've got lots of time to take some calls. Got some calls, the line's wide open. You want to give us a call, it's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Before we get to that, though, let me throw this out. 1945, going back a little bit, a second musical done by the team of Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein called Carousel. Came in 1949. One of their songs was real popular. I learned to sing it in both high school choir, chorus, and the church choir. Everybody's covered it. Elvis has done it. Everybody's done it. But a group called Jerry and the Pacemakers did it in 1963, and it became the theme song of the Liverpool Football Club, their soccer club. Liverpool, last night, for the first time in 30 years, won the English Premier League. First time in 30 years they've done this. And I thought of this song, but get this. It's not just about football and all like that. Some of the lyrics are important for all of us right now. All of us right now. We'd like to play just the first tune of this 1963 hit by Jerry and the Pacemakers called You'll Never Walk Alone.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky and the sweet silver song.
Folks, you'll never walk alone. Let's get back to gardening, though. Let's talk about roses. Lisa Strayhorn is calling. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm fine on this rainy day.
Yes, indeed. But it's good. It's what makes our roses grow.
Well, not this one. It's my neighbor's, and somebody planted it for a couple of years ago. It's a little tiny, like, tea rose.
Uh-huh.
But the hole is I think it's like go straight down. It's in like gravelly up by a house. Uh-huh. And it's not doing well at all, and it's about dying again. So I was thinking about digging it up and making a hole bigger for it and replanting it.
Yeah, that's always good. You know, shrubs, what happens here, Lisa, is when it rains a lot, down deep fills up with water, and deep roots, they drown, they rot. So they end up with shallow roots under the because of our heavy rains, and then those shallow roots are subject to drying and heat and all like that. So it's better to have a wide root system than a deep root system.
This one doesn't have any root system because the other two rose bushes have bigger holes and they were planted, and this one wasn't. And it's just it's stunts every year and it's getting ready to die. And it's got a little tiny pretty rose and it blooms one time, but it won't hurt to do it this time of year.
Well, you know, not if you can save it, but do this first. Go ahead and cut it back. When you cut a rose back, it takes immediate stress off the roots, but it stimulates healthy new growth. So it does two things. It'll save the root, the rose from being dug in the summertime. It'll stimulate some strong new growth. And then dig the hole, I'm going to say, if you don't, 3 feet wide, that seems crazy.
But no, I don't.
But
the last one. Yeah. It was good.
And if you'll just take a little bit of organic matter, some bark, some compost, potting soil, any kind of organic matter, and just stir two or three shovels full in with the native dirt. You know, you don't want to overdo that. Then that'll help.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good luck. And do it as soon as you can because it could get hot real soon.
As soon as it quits raining.
There you go.
And
one last thing, don't keep it wet after you do that. Water it really good, but, you know, no more than every week or two, you know, because too much water is worse than not enough.
Yeah, I'll kill them.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, appreciate it, Lisa. Okay, now let's go on to Lyon. Homer, you know, not many people know where Lyon is. Clarksdale is a suburb of Lyon.
There you go.
There you go. What's up?
That's it. I'm growing greens. I got this and what I'm doing now is just kind of keeping them broke up, distant them about once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get ready to plant in August, about the middle of August, the last weekend of August, is it anything that you suggest putting in the dirt to actually condition it? I want to ask you about, is sawdust a no-no? If I can find a sawmill and put some sawdust in it from the wood cuttings, is that a good thing, a bad thing?
Well, it's both good and bad. Anything you add to your dirt fluffs it up like crackers in a bowl of chili. Anything you do is going to improve the soil. The problem mm-hmm. with sawdust and any kind of fresh bark or any fresh stuff like that is it when you mix it with the dirt, it starts composting. It starts getting eaten by bacteria and stuff, which is good. But they use nitrogen for their bodies. So they can temporarily pull fertilizer away from your plant. So if you're going to do that, don't overdo it. And then make sure that you give your plants a little, instead of just fertilizing once when you set them out, give them a little bit of extra nitrogen at a time over, the first month or so. In other words, sort of supplement that. A little extra, not triple 13 or not the whole thing, but just nitrogen. To sort of compensate for that stuff breaking it down. If you go ahead and work it in now, you know, pretty soon, and throw a little nitrogen in with it, it'll be ready to plant without all that problem at all by August.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. A lot of times what I do now, I take a little bit of urea. I don't like using synthetic fertilizer, but I will.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. And just take it and break it in about a week or two before I actually do my sowing.
Yeah. Well, if you can put the sawdust in before, pretty uh-huh. soon, and throw a little urea on it and, put the sawdust out there, put a little urea on it, and then work it into the dirt together, that urea will help the sawdust break down before you ever get around to planting. And if you plant before, what's the earliest you planted greens to still get something?
Well, I try to get them in around the middle of August and keep them pretty wet.
Yeah.
You get along a season that way.
That's right. A lot of people don't realize of course, greens don't like it in the middle of the summer because they get bitter and the heat burns them up. But late July, August, middle of August, towards the end of August, you can still plant plenty of greens and for a good and they'll be ready to harvest just when the weather starts to cool down and they get sweeter.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Phil.
Okay. Good luck on it, Homer. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, and let's slide up to Starkville. Hey, Graham, good morning.
Good morning.
What's up?
I was going to comment on your reference to Dr. Mullinax's criticism of introduction of non-native plants. Three summers ago, a distinguished lecturer from the University of Delaware, he's a biologist, probably an ornithologist, I'm almost sure he was, also commented on how foreign plants, non-native plants, don't provide the insect parasites that the songbirds need to multiply, and commented on the manner in which that has helped reduce the number of songbirds we have around now. And I think I heard in the past year that something of the order of 4 billion birds have disappeared in the last 50 years for usual. Anyway, I just thought I'd add to that another reason why foreign plants, non-native plants, have a grave disadvantage to the biology of the area.
Yeah, and I would agree with that to a point, but the truth is a lot of native plants are not good garden plants. Poison ivy comes to mind, and some oaks are real thugs, but some of the introduced plants are actually very good for wild zinnias, you know, for example. But there's quite a lot. I recommend native plants as much as practical, but there's some really good non-native plants that are supportive for wildlife. But anyway, great point, though. I appreciate that, Graham, a whole bunch. Appreciate your call about that. Whew, we're out of time, folks. Out of time. Congratulations, Liverpool. Go Premier League. Yes, indeed. But congratulations to those of you who are going to take a kid out to a garden center this weekend, today, tomorrow. Take them to a garden center. Get them a big pot that they can't quite put their arms around. Fill it with some potting soil. Let them pick out some kind of culinary herb or a vegetable, some flowers, something that shows them, help them to learn how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty. It's a good weekend, folks, to get out and do some stuff. We got problems with insects and disease, blah, 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 blah. Shoot me an email, and we'll work through this together. Remember, as long as MPB is here, you'll never walk alone.